Okay, now I'm sorry, you were talking about the project in Aberdeen Improvement Plan.
Yes, and we even had these 9x12 or 8.5x11 sheets that were the abstract forms duplicated on large McBee keys or edge notched cards, and recommended, as we did it as an experiment, that the librarians would take those cards and notch around the edges for the material and the type of test and so forth. The librarians, the records clerks that were keeping the firing records, for example, and the women who were analyzing the technical reports on tests of self-propelled vehicles or tanks, or that, you know, bit much heavier reports. Firing records tended to be one or two sheets. They all felt that they knew what needed to be recorded as index entries, because they knew how people came and asked for things. And we said, if you are more flexible, you may be able to find things no matter how people ask for them. How do I explain this? It was a circle. People went up to the library looking for things and asked for firing records of a certain piece of material because they knew they could get it from that piece of material. Mm-hmm. Then they had to look through the firing records for what they wanted, what information they wanted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we were trying to say, if you do this multi-dimensional indexing, you can get the firing records from any one of a number of ways, mm-hmm. and your clientele will learn that they can ask for them
mm-hmm.
in a number of ways.
And whose system was this that you were...
We were... Perry, Barry, and Kent were at Aberdeen Proving Ground on a contract with the Development and Proof Services to try to help them improve the management of their own information. Mm-hmm. It was their own technical reports mm-hmm. that they wanted they wanted to improve access to, okay? Mm-hmm. And they did this, Bob, because one time they found that they had gone through a complete test of a tank durability and terrain and all that sort of thing, testing of a tank, which costs some amount of money, time and engineers and you know, to personnel and running the thing, money, only to discover that same tank had already been completely analyzed and mm-hmm. tested. And they didn't like that kind of wasting of money.
Mm-hmm.
Another time they found that a man, one of their firing range engineers, was killed when a piece of material, and I'm not sure whether it was ammunition or grenade or something like that, blew up. And there was information in their files that said that lot number of that piece of material is faulty, but nobody told the engineer, you know, so that both the money wasted and the life wasted mm-hmm. weighed on the director of the lab, and he came. We were at Battelle at the time, and he came to us, and we had a contract. A byproduct of the telegraphic abstracts was that we suggested they bind up in a monthly abstract bulletin the copies of these telegraphic abstracts, and management loved that because there they had a snapshot,
mm-hmm.
you know, current.
Yeah, yeah. When you made a recommendation for the Aberdeen project, was it for a particular system You know, you said edge notch cards. Was that the outcome there?
Yes, for firing records, we recommended that they do these edge notch cards because all the time that we were there, we were collecting terminology and trying to analyze it and doing tabulating equipment mm-hmm. runs mm-hmm. and and saying that if we were to establish a machine system, you could use these factored terms and get better retrieval. What happened was that Perry got an offer from Jesse Shearer to open the Center for Documentation and Communication Research at Western Reserve.
So the Aberdeen thing was a Battelle contract?
Was a Battelle contract. And I stayed on at Aberdeen when Perry and Kent went to Western Reserve.
Okay. Can we go back now just a little bit? Why was the decision made to leave MIT and go to Battelle? That I'm not clear about.
Perry could not get tenure at MIT because he didn't belong to any one department. You know, he was in the research lab of electronics for a while, and he was in the modern language department, and he was in the library. But he felt insecure.
Despite all these publications?
I said to him, you may not have stability, but you have security in your reputation and your position in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted the stability, okay? And
now, what was your status? You were a research assistant?
I was a research assistant, and then and I really shouldn't bother you with this, but I have all the documentation to prove it. I was a research assistant in the modern language.
Uh-huh. Okay. And Kent was the same?
I'm not sure what. Research assistant in modern languages starting in February 1, 1950.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then in July 1, 1950, research assistant in modern languages.
Uh-huh.
July 1, 51, I became a technical assistant in modern languages. And then in November, beginning in October of 51, I became a staff member of the division. It's called DIC, which was the Division of Industrial Cooperation. And I think it was because the money was coming not from MIT, but from contracts,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we had each of us got a personal service contract with the Central Intelligence Agency, and that's I think it was the Institute for Applied Research or something, some innocuous name that meant nothing, where all the MIT classified contracts were. And it was in the, and then Battelle,
okay,
July 153.
So the lack of tenure possibilities that
weighed on Perry
mm-hmm.
more than I thought it had to.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, that was the way he felt.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kent was already on staff with you all at
Yes, he came from InterScience Publishers, I
mm-hmm.
think, who did the punch card book, you know, and
yeah,
he learned
yeah.
about Perry's
okay.
work and was interested huh. in joining. We went down from Washington. We went down from Cambridge to Washington to work on the CIA contract.
Mm-hmm.
After working for a while in Cambridge, I think Joe Becker felt that it would be useful for us to be right there.
Oh, he was at CIA at
yes,
that time.
Yes, he was okay. I believe the librarian at CIA.
Okay.
And what Perry, one of the things that we were talking about was the semantic content of their terminology. But also Perry was exploring the idea of audit trails from one document to another. The CIA analyst would read these reports that came in, one page, two pages, from employee staff out in the field, and they would mention names and places, and then they would like to be able to find out if that name or that place or that organization had been mentioned before. And it was, there was both a tendency to ignore, you know, not to worry about it, I'm working on this report, or there, it was difficult to try to track down. But I never heard any more about that, audit trails, in that sense, except that if you had a collection of technical documents, like they got to work from Western Reserve with the American Society for Metals, then you could trace documents that were connected. Now we do it with hypermedia.
But
in many things that Perry did and thought about were before his time, not only as concepts but as an ability to do anything about it. We didn't have the equipment. We didn't have, even when we had computers, we didn't have the memory, you know, the storage capacity that people take for granted now.
Well, let's talk about that, the telegraphic abstract you've mentioned several times here from the 1997 perspective. Reading about those, they strike me as tremendously just complicated with all that code stuff in there.
The telegraphic abstracts that they used at ASM, the American Society for Metals. I have to agree with you that I think they got terribly complicated. The fact is, though, that even Uniterm, you know, the documentation index, Documentation Inc., Uniterm system, when it got applied to larger collections, needed to be modified with links and roles. And the people at DuPont came up with that activity. Calvin Moore's Zeta coding worked very well in small, compact, if you will, it's certainly in terms of subject matter, compact collections. But when you got larger collections, those systems broke down. And Perry and Kent, as they continued the semantic factoring activity at Western Reserve, felt the need for these infixes and symbols that said what the role, you know, links and roles, in effect. And the telegraphic abstract, I see it as an embodiment of a documentation page in the back of a technical report, and the utility of it is that you can see at a glance what the report is about. Of course, it's only as good as the people who write it, you know. But it's got an abstract, it's got subject terms, and our thought for the telegraphic abstract in this form and for this report documentation page was that it would be an aid for the indexer. The trouble is that indexers felt, you know, the women at Aberdeen felt that they knew what to do, how to file this firing record and how to index it better than the engineer who worked on it. So they tended, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of indexers of technical reports ignore those documentation pages, you know. But the picture of a telegraphic abstract of an ASM document is very daunting. And in some respects, it looks like input of a document in the STML, is it the
oh right
the
STML
STML
SGML
S right. Yeah
right uh-huh and HTML also,
yeah, with all of the
right
symbols and so forth. How I think the idea of expressing the meanings of words is a good idea and a valid idea, but the embodiment of it at that point in time was kind of torturous, you know.
But its purpose was condensation of as much information, both semantic factoring and telegraphic abstract.
Yes, and indexing with links and rolls, kind of, you know. I remember at DuPont they wanted to be able to designate for their chemical reports files starting materials, catalysts, end products, reaction type, you know. And the words themselves didn't make clear what were the links and the roles of these different individual terms. And they didn't worry at that point about synonyms or near synonyms, you know, which Perry was trying to take into account.
And all of this was designed basically for unit record equipment.
Yes, and Perry built his own searching selector, his own computer.
The Western Reserve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Loon scanner had a possibility, to, you know, promised possibilities, because it looked for strings of symbols and a number of units in a single pass and that sort of thing. But
why do you think the Loon scanner, the idea there, didn't go on and develop?
Because it was at the same time the general purpose computers were developing, were becoming more flexible, more with more storage capacity, and you could use the computers, the special purpose computers of varying kinds, fell by the wayside in favor of general purpose computers that were becoming more flexible, becoming cheaper, you know, having more storage capacity. Everything that we wanted was coming down the pike.
Now, when you say fell by the wayside, you had put in there the Western Reserve searching selector,
yes,
the Loon scanner.
Yeah, and the GE was going to make a searching selector or searching machine based on that. And you think of things like the rapid selector, the Magna Card, The IBM Walnut, you know, all the things that were going to move little pieces of film and stuff like that. And as magnetic storage became greater capacity, lower cost, and so forth, these other developments were no longer attractive. They had, you know.
Well, in that regard, does that mean that semantic factoring and telegraphic abstracts as an idea was based or worth only in terms of those machines? Or was it possible to carry them over to the general purpose computer?
I think it was possible. I think that that ASM went into, you know, their files went on to general purpose computers. I think that the idea of analyzing terms and recording terms in terms of semantic units was probably more expensive than the value of being able to search the semantic content. We've gone through a couple of cycles, certainly, in our profession. We espoused full-text searching, never mind what the term, you know, the terminology. If you had the whole text to search through, mm-hmm. you could come up with what you want. And it didn't always work. You know, full-text searching was not the answer completely. Weighted terms, according to how frequently or how close mm-hmm. together or whatever weighing does some good. I went to a class. I'm taking a class on Office Suite for the Windows 95, and I went to a class also, it was only two nights, on the internet, searching the internet. And the teacher said, now if you search for this information, you come up with a list that says here are the first 20 of the you know 450 that answer your request, the first 20 most relevant or whatever. And he said, I don't know how they do that, but, and I thought, we've been spending years trying to decide how to tell somebody that these answers are the best that that you can expect, you know, mm-hmm. all the way back to Cyril Cleverman.
Yeah, right? Very definitely.
Yeah, huh. So that we are still concerned. Now, when I gave my paper in Columbus in 53, was it?
93, you mean?
93, yeah.
I
said at the time that some of that semantic analysis was still being done today. The Library of Medicine is doing work that includes semantic analysis, and somebody at Biological Abstracts was talking about semantic factoring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that it's the terminology is still of concern.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you tie those two to vocabulary control?
I think it's just a method of vocabulary control. if you say I'm going to record this term in the form of semantic factors.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're free to put together the semantic factors as you see fit for your collection or your vocabulary. Otherwise, vocabulary control says if you have this kind of a term, you use this. And I think it's a method of vocabulary control.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two camps in our profession that said you don't need vocabulary control, and another camp that said you need very tightly controlled vocabulary control.
Where did you place yourself?
I am more comfortable with vocabulary control, but I left semantic factoring when I left Perry and Kent, and the semantic and their embodiment of semantic factoring got, in my mind, too complex,
to be practical.
Yeah, too complex to be practical.
Mm-hmm.
I preached vocabulary control to the sending agencies in the sense of use the same, all of you get together and decide what your data elements are and how you define them, and then you use those data elements
mm-hmm.
according to that those decisions that you make. So
mm-hmm.
it's a I think over the years that I have been more concerned about standardization of whatever form, standard format, standard vocabulary, standard cataloging rules,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a way of contributing to the control.
Yeah. Where did you see folks like Mrs. Schultz and her work on counting, doing word counts and those kinds of things? Did you see her in either one of these two camps that you mentioned?
Well, I think that is the same kind of thing that not the same kind of thing, but a version of the work that Salton did with the SMART system,
mm-hmm.
where he was doing. I'm not sure what he would call it, but frequency counts,
right,
and
right.
People are still doing a lot of very technical work in word counts and
mm-hmm. And much akin to weighting of terms.
Yeah, and the weighting of terms,
yeah.
And so forth. Mort Taube started out with the unit term system, saying you pick the words out of the document and don't worry about synonyms or near synonyms or standard terms. As people began to apply that, especially to larger collections, they had to standardize. They had to insist on vocabulary control,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or it just got out of hand. You know, you couldn't.
Yeah. Well, let's go back chronologically. What brought you all initially to Battelle? Wasn't the CIA contract? There
no.
was a period in which you all, the three of you, were in D.C. working on the CIA contract?
Yes.
Before Battelle?
Yes.
And how long a period was that?
6 months or so.
Okay.
And I think that somebody at Battelle persuaded Perry to come out. And what time of the day is it, by the way?
12:15.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Another few minutes and I'll get us some lunch, okay?
Okay.
And I have to tell you, I'm not sure how it came about, who initiated the discussion, and maybe that 1954 paper that was in Chem Engineering News, that picture was taken at Battelle. And
I don't think so. I've read
that. It doesn't say how we got there?
No, pretty sure it isn't.
Oh, well, that's up here. Well, anyway, I think that Perry saw that as a way of stability. You know, the CIA contract would end,
mm-hmm.
and there was nobody urging him to go back to MIT.